WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today. At least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome. Ooh, it was a little loud. Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk. I'm filled with a little extra energy this evening, although I'm sure that my all-star producer, the one and only Larry Nelson, right now is probably on his 14th cup of coffee.
I only had one large coffee today.
As he did a stupendous job. Not only does he do a fantastic job on Saturday nights.
That's a fun show.
The oldies and still spinning some of the songs that you just can't hear anywhere else.
Yeah, and they call in for these songs, and sometimes Ed Bowen and I look at each other and go, I don't know that one. And then we do
wait,
know.
Wait. Ed Bowen would actually say that? Really?
Yeah. And another one we don't have. So they do keep us on our toes.
But it's an excellent show.
Thank you.
But then you are, basically, you have to spell Rob Hakala from time to time. And you did that this morning, and you are back for another evening stint. Yep,
yeah. That's what I thought. You know, when my head hits the pillow tonight, I'm going to go right out.
So, as I started off saying, is I have a little extra energy because I actually took a week off. Shh, don't tell nobody. That's why we had kind of like a best of last Monday, but it wasn't really because it was timely.
Yeah.
We had Kathy Lenatra and the folks from the Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce and some of the folks who are going to be doing the dance with us. And, of course, Larry took care of all that. So kudos to you, Larry, for all that you do and making this place tick.
Thank you, Kevin. And thank you for keeping everybody up to date on things that are going on. You know, we're keeping this ship floating ever since Bob Hedlund started and just continuing to ride along and letting everybody know what's going on in the Commonwealth.
Well, he would be part of tonight's show. We have a slew.
An impressive lineup you have.
We have a slew. I do want to keep that in there.
I like that.
That is an impressive lineup you have tonight, as Bob would say, as Mayor Hedlund would say. We had to get him back on. It's been a while.
I'm sure.
I know that he has hounded me a few times about wanting to come back on and do the show for a night.
Yeah.
Like, listen, next time you go away.
And I have to get some pizzas now.
Yeah, I know. Okay. So he has said that. But no, I had a chance to jump on a ship and to go away. And I'm back. And we have a great lineup, as you have already teased.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, of course, my first guest is already here, as he's going to be joining us in a moment. The State House Report with none other State Representative Dave DeCoste will join us. Representative,
good to be here, Kevin. Always good to be here.
How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well.
We are going to dig right in. I brought you in for a couple of different reasons. I'll finish up who else is on in a moment, but I just want to tease Dave's segment. As folks may or may not know, that the governor signed an executive order directing executive branch agencies to review contracts, agreements with Russia. And so we thought we'd have Dave, and Dave's also a military veteran, as he has done, he has given his service to our country. And I want to get his take on not only this order, but also on what's going on and how it's going to affect the Commonwealth. So Dave's here. And then anything else Dave has, you know, again, it's usually when we have a great rotation of state reps, state senators, anybody in the who serves in the constitutional office comes on and joins me for this radio segment. Dave is one of those ones. I call him, and usually I'll either call him or text him or email him, and it usually takes less than a couple of hours, and he's back to me, and it's usually an exuberant yes, absolutely. And he shows up here, and so whatever else Dave wants to make sure he touches upon while he's here, we will tend to that business as well. Following Dave, we're going to have Anthony Amore. Anthony, who ran for, I think, Secretary of State, unsuccessful bid. Well, now he is throwing his hat in, Republican for State Auditor. We're going to find out his thoughts on running for that race and some of the things that he would look to do if he became the next State Auditor in 2023. So we'll talk with him about that. Hour number two. We're going to speak with another Republican, Chris Doty. Chris is a Republican for governor here in the Commonwealth of Mass. He will make the third gubernatorial candidate that we have had on, and we'll get his take on running for governor. And then we'll wrap things up. Brock DeMeo, Robert Sullivan. A lot of things going on in the great city of Champions. We're going to check in with him, not only about his inaugural address that he gave, but some of the things that he's going to look forward to doing over the next 2 years. So,
I am so stressed out. The school, home, bills, government, economy, gas prices, vaccines. It is so hard to get anything done and so stressful. We are all stretched to the max with no end in sight. We're all saying the same thing to one another. This is crazy. I'm not the bringer of bad news. I bring good news. And the good news is we're all in this together. And I actually find comfort in that. So let's all take these stress-relieving, mindful breaths together. Don't change the channel. Shh. Take a breath. I'm inhaling. I'm exhaling. Brennan's Smoke Shop. Have a great day.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And return we do. Joining me, as I said, teasing it, Dave DeCoste, state representative serving the 5th Plymouth District. I believe as it is constructed right now, it's Noel, Rockland, and Hanover.
There you go.
But
we're losing, next time around, we'll be losing Precinct 3 in Norwell, which is basically the area up around Scituate that's going over to Patrick County, Patrick Kearney, excuse me. I've got the county on my mind tonight, Patrick Kearney. And that's the area over by Old Oak and Bucket and Mount Blue area. And we're going to pick up Precinct 1 in Hanson, which is the area over by Mayette's and kind of borders Rockland over in the, I guess you would say it was in the northeast.
Now, you were kind enough, you brought me a generous gift of Girl Scout cookies.
Thanks to the Rockland Girl. Those are Rockland Girl Scout cookies. But I make it a point to refund a little of my pay raise. So what we do is we purchase the Girl Scout cookies. And then before I can eat any of them or anybody else in my office without saying any names, we get them right over to the senior centers and other senior citizens. Not that you're a senior citizen, but other folks to eat those babies up. But those mints are terrific. I'm partial to the peanut ones.
So am I. And Dave, you're not saying anything, out of school. I am trending in that direction. So it's okay.
We both
for you to say it. I will not be offended by you saying that. But you know, I have to say this is what's happening in the world right now. As I was driving here and seeing how the price of gas has jumped, leapt. Coming up 139, coming up 53, 139, seeing the prices right off some stations boldly having it at like $4.50, $4.60. We're going to be seeing $5 before you know it. I can only worry as to how much this precious box of goodies will cost if gas prices remain at that.
They've been $5, and I guess we can depreciate tonight that we live somewhere where you can have Girl Scouts out selling their cookies without having any additional worries beyond whether or not they're going to sell them all or they're going to have to wait till next time. So always a good organization. And we try to help the Scouts as much as we know. They're terrific. Girl and Boy Scouts, throughout the three towns do a terrific job. We always get the silver, bronze, silver, and gold level Girl Scouts and the Eagle Scouts from out of the troops in the towns, and just to do a terrific job. And it's always, I joke when we give the citation, but it's good for my mental health when I go there. I enjoy going to those events. And we've got, as I recall, we've got Rockland, I believe, ceremony. I just did the ceremony in Hanover, but we've got a Rockland ceremony coming up where the, I believe they're called Weeblos, and they're becoming Scouts, a transition there, and they have a ceremony, which is terrific.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, as I teased at the top of the hour, the reason why I had you in here, not only because it was, well, next man up, it was your turn to come on board and chat as you do, whether it's talking about how since the first pay raises were given out that you give that back and you donate that and you keep the newsroom and you keep myself apprised of stuff like that, or any piece of legislature that's ready to head to a public hearing or that's going to be a conversation, you're usually the one who wants to come and share that information with this news outlet, this radio station. I thought of you back 10, 11 days ago when Russia invaded Ukraine, knowing that you're also a military veteran, and also knowing some of you probably, what went through your mind when you heard that they had crossed over the border into you? Because we've known it's been building up. They've been building up forces at the border of Ukraine, which they share a part of their the border with.
Well, I guess the first thing that went through my mind was that the potential for some real heavy casualties among the civilians, because the Russians are not an army that's known to fool around, and when you look what they did at Grozny, they have the potential to do a lot of harm. They thus far, have it's almost shocking the level of ineptness as a military force. When I was, if guys run out of gas. That's the type of thing where if you're in a unit in a civilian training, when I say civilian, I mean in a peacetime training scenario, that's the type of thing where people would be relieved if you had a major exercise. And yet these fellows are in wartime, the level of unpreparedness. And on the other hand, and I guess even more pronounced, was the reaction from the Ukrainians, because nobody was ever sure how they would. And seriously, they have risen to the occasion. And the only thing that has crossed my mind a bit was they have not. I wish they had put together, and they probably in retrospect should have known. It's kind of puzzling why they did not implement some type of reserve system that was expanded earlier. And it's not uncommon in that area. The Swedes, in fact, within the last few years, have just resumed the draft. Finland never stopped. Switzerland has an enormous reserve army. Greece and Turkey. And I'm a big fan of the reserves for a number of reasons. I think you get a lot of punch for what you pay. But these here you have Ukrainians who are going to go into essentially combat with maybe a day or two. Some of them have never fired their rifle before. There was a report where you had one soldier guarding a bridge where, and he was in a regular army Ukrainian soldier. He had fired 17 rounds in his lifetime. And number one, I guess we should be glad with our own reservists and military that we do a much better job preparing our men and women. And but number two, given that level of training or the paucity of training, I suppose, that despite that, they're overwhelmed with the number of men coming forward to fight, and women who are coming forward to serve their country in one capacity or another. And it's heartening. It's heartening. So we hope that they reach an accord soon. And I know you did want to talk about some of the things that we're doing in this state. We had a little tiff on Facebook today. I do not like to get involved with national issues and things that I can't
control.
Not because I don't agree with them. It's just because it's not something that we deal with at the state level. It's not something we deal with. But generally, I in terms of what we can do at the state level and the state of Mass can do for Ukrainians, I think the governor, has been in a position where he has issued an executive order that I think pretty much covers it all. He says, you know, and I'll steal a little bit of his thunder, but it goes to the normal order of what these things. You know, he talks about whereas Ukrainian people engage in a brave defense of their country, the Russian attack continues as escalated, so forth and so on. But it lays out a few of the things that we're going to do as a state. And he directs the administration finance department to, basically review what any exchange with any Russian state-owned company and put an end to it, any Russian-controlled entity, any Russian body. And a review of existing department agencies, basically eliminating anything we do that can possibly be siphoning money into the Russian economy right now. We're going to put an end to it. Just as importantly, he's indicated that the Massachusetts Office of Refugees and Immigrants are going to work in collaboration with the federal government. So if there is any importation of people who are displaced, Ukrainian immigrants, we're going to work with them and see that they're displaced and that they're taken care of here. It's also directed that all the independent agencies, so the schools, everything that's independent, Massport to the extent they can do it, MBTA have a pretty sizable pension investments, everyone's going to do pretty much the same thing, and to the extent we can not provide the Russians any extra income to sustain this war effort. And it goes through, this order shall continue in effect till amended, so it's basically permanent. And as always, Governor Charles T. Baker, and I always like at the end of these, they say, God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So, and I should say to her credit, Deb Goldberg, Treasurer Goldberg, got way out ahead of this. And she had already written to our legislature on the 1st that although she would like to execute a number of policies regarding the pension system, she needs the authority to do that. So legislation is now being drafted in conjunction with her office in coordination to let her do exactly what she needs to do to make sure that no Russian investments are going to figure into any pensions of the U.S.
Knowing that one of the main things we're seeing right now is a spike in gas prices, how can this have an effect on the state? I know that, you know, the legislature is in the full throes of discussing the 2023 budget. I wonder what ramifications, what's happening globally is going to have on the economy come start July 1st.
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I can tell you that this is an absolute regressive tax, meaning it falls on the lower income much harder because obviously prices go up and gas prices, transportation, people trying to get to work. And so we're taking a look, although I don't think we're going to do it, at possibly eliminating maybe for a few months the gasoline tax. As I said, it's not something I think we're going to do. And beyond that, there are a number of things we can do locally perhaps to mitigate it a bit, but there's not a whole lot at the state level we can do that would make much of a difference. And, you would like to see, and again, I don't like to get into national policy,
yep,
but I'm aware of energy, and as a guy who invests a bit in it and has for a while, and just I'm interested in the whole process. They have implemented some pretty heavy methane recovery regulations in terms of drilling. They have cut back on
fracking.
Fracking.
Yep.
They have ended the Keystone Pipeline, which would not immediately be done by now, but it would be the ability to factor into other pipelines above Cushing, Oklahoma, which would get it out and the Canadian oil, not down here because it happens to be sour oil, so they'd send that probably down to Venezuela and be refined. But at least it would move it, and oil is fungible. It's a commodity, so the more you know that's available, obviously the price goes down. So and by the way, if anyone wants to look it up, we have been very, in terms of the Alaska pipelines, traded as BPT over the stock exchange, but we have really limited what we can pump out and what they're allowed to pump out over the North Slope. And when you look at it, and even the facilities up there, it's a tiny facility with a pipeline. And I have often wondered why we have not expanded. It is enormous up there, and what we're allowed to look at and pump out is just doesn't amount to much, and the potential is, it could be very substantial. So we'll see what goes on at the state level, and we can't do much, but I think what we can do is already been indicated by the governor. I think we're going to move in that direction very quickly.
I'll ask you a personal question. Now that you're an older gentleman like myself, any fear that we're going to endure a Cold War version 2? Are we in the full throes of it now?
Well, I think that people smarter than I, if you look, but I've looked. You read a couple of folks, and the folks I talk to are still in the service. I mean, this is kind of a reflection of what they thought was happening with the Soviets. I should say Russians anyway. They're not the Soviets anymore. Mm. They're a lot smaller. They have a lot less money. And the fact that their army apparently has no night vision devices. They have no GPS. In other words, the soldiers are leaving without maps. When you deploy as an American soldier, an American service member, you know what the mission is, and we train to remove, our higher, they do it regularly when you're training. You remove the company commander or the battalion commander, and you'll be left with maybe a couple of lieutenants or company grade officers. And our units still run because everyone's aware of the mission. Everyone can read a map in a perfect world. Everyone's able to operate a weapon system. So, for instance, I was an artillery officer. Mm-hmm. Our cooks and clerks, our mechanics could all get on a 105 or 155 millimeter gun and operate it. We regularly trained to do that. Our artillery guys that were forward deployed with the infantry could operate their 60-man 120 millimeter, not only the weapon systems, but also the gunnery that goes along with it. It's a little more complicated. And you look at these Russians, and they're just... kind of lost, the ones that got into. You might have seen.
Yeah, there've been. I've seen stories on the on the 24-hour news, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, Fox. I watch all of them, just so I can at least see a clear perspective, whether it's got a slant one way or the other. Just see. But I got to say, is watching the different news channels, I'm hearing it. There's a lot more neutrality. You're not hearing it where it's kind of there's more of a one wing or the other. It's they're kind of. They get the different, whether it's President Zelensky on, different individuals who are holed up somewhere. And they've been doing a nice job at least kind of giving an indication as to what's going on.
Yeah, and I think what the biggest takeaway out of this for me was just the resilience of the Ukrainian people. And that if the Russians thought that they were going to invade and that the Ukrainians were going to fold like a deck of cards. It didn't happen. It's not happening.
I wonder if the Russians thought, almost like when we had a collective group of nations go in regarding Kuwait and go into Iraq and the Iraqi soldiers, basically a lot of them giving up. And that hasn't happened in Ukraine, and I think I'm curious as if the Russian leadership, the military leaders thought that this was going to be, you send in a bunch of cruise missiles, you bomb the daylights out of them, they're just going to give up, and they're just going to say, uncle, and the president will flee the country. That hasn't happened.
It's a good-sized country. It's 40 million. I happen to be looking up the, the Swiss, for instance. I talked about the reserves. The Swiss have a population of about 8 million, but three quarters of them are Swiss, so say 6 million. They're able to field a 200,000 or 300,000 man army.
Wow.
in overnight, almost, because everyone in Switzerland, everyone brings their rifle home, or just about. So they take this here. And again, it kind of makes you wonder why, knowing what they potentially faced, the Ukrainians did not work to at least institute some type of training. You know, I know even the Taiwanese do that, that, you know, in the young men, as a matter of fact, will get military training while they're in high school.
Interesting. We get 90 seconds left. Anything you want to touch upon as we exit out, or do you want to just kind of give a calling card? If anybody has anything that they want to reach out to, they can do so. And
well, I'm always at 617-722-2460, which is extension 8, and we'll put that up in the Facebook tonight. But even at ATD, they know how to put people in touch with me. We've got some good news. How about quick some good news to end this up?
Please do so.
With Josh Cutler leading the way and all of us in the South Shore delegation pushing hard, for the first time, the South Shore VOTEC is in the pipeline to evaluate construction needs, and it's a good omen for at some point building and rebuilding, building or renovating the South Shore VOTEC, which sorely needs it. And Dr. Hickey and his team over there do a terrific job. Mm. And you've been over there. Those kids are just fantastic. And I know I speak for everyone in Plymouth County. I was just delighted to have that first phase approved. And we look forward. We look forward to that process. And at some point, I won't say in the near future, but in the next to the near future, maybe getting some ground broken over there, either to renovate the whole building, or maybe to rebuild from scratch. So, and they just do a terrific job there.
Well, I'm sure that the eight communities that the South Shore Technical School represents, that they're quite pleased as well. So I'm sure they're going to be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah, they it put a smile on my face, and I know it put a smile on everyone in the delegation down here's face.
Excellent.
No doubt about it.
Representative, as always, I thank you for coming in for great conversation, updates, and we'll have you back on in a couple of weeks as well.
All right. So. Talk to you soon, Kevin.
You got it.
Thank you very much.
There he is. State Representative Dave DeCoste, our guest. We're going to step aside. When we come back, I promise, more Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
When you needed your mom, she was always there with the Vicks VapoRub. She used that soothing scent to calm you, and her mom used it to calm her. And her mom, well, you get the idea. Vicks VapoRub's always been there. It always made you feel better, and today, it still does. Bring back those childhood memories with the comfort and care only Vicks VapoRub can bring. Vicks VapoRub, family tradition for a reason.
Gentlemen, now you can find the best brands and fits for you without even trying. Just follow these easy instructions. Step 1, shop a personalized store that does all the work for you by customizing a selection for your taste and body. Step 2, level up your closet with the best brands and fits with little to no effort. Not trying has never looked so good. Introducing Stitch Fix Freestyle, your personalized store. We're so you.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England. Brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, another full show in store for you. Tons of new music and upcoming events to let you know about. And we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Zola Simone. That's tomorrow, 8 till 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
As I promised, we have returned for more conversation. Conversation now, we change to the state auditor's race. Quickly, the field is growing, as folks may not know. The current state auditor, Suzanne Bump, is not seeking another term in office. Joining us for this segment is a gentleman who is a Republican. He is a candidate for state auditor. We have Anthony Morey joining us. Anthony, welcome to Monday Night Talk Star. Let's try that again. Anthony, are you there?
Yes, Anthony's here.
Anthony, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
Sometimes you're going to, it's dealing with a fader or a button, and thank you to Larry for teching that real quick. Welcome to the show. For folks who may or may not know you, maybe they may not remember your run for Secretary of State, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, again, thank you for having me, Kevin. I'm a security expert and investigator, and for more than 30 years, I've worked in investigations and audits and inspections. I've spent the first half of my career in Homeland Security and Homeland Security agencies. I worked with Immigration, FAA Security, and then helped to build TSA at Logan Airport. And after 15 years doing that, I moved over to the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston. And I oversee security there, and I do the investigation into the stolen paintings.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I've been doing that for more than 16 years now. Every time I say that, I shudder, thinking it's a 16-year investigation, but we'll do whatever it takes to get them back.
So I would ask you, what went into you deciding that you were going to run for state auditor?
Well, I as you mentioned, I ran for a statewide office in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And ran basically on a platform of transparency, bringing transparency to the Commonwealth in its state government. And I saw that the state auditor's seat was open. Suzanne Bump is stepping down. I'm a Republican. It's difficult to win statewide office in Massachusetts. But with an open seat and two Democrats vying for it on the other side, I thought this is a chance to run for an office and hopefully win and serve the Commonwealth in a position where I could be a watchdog and keep an eye on the taxpayers' money, look at what agencies are doing, and at the same time let the public know what I'm finding. And that just seems like a great way to bring that transparency, that sunshine to Beacon Hill and root out waste, fraud, and abuse.
Now, how closely have you researched this particular office? What's been done over the past couple of years, past several years? And what are some of the things that you would consider modifying?
That's a great question. I have looked at it very closely. I know that the office is required by law to do an audit of every one of our 210 state agencies every 3 years. And for the last 12 or so years, the auditor's office has fallen short of that milestone. So the first thing I would do would be a self-audit, audit the state auditor's office. And I would do this, though, with truly independent auditors. I know in the past, State Auditor Association has looked into the office, and I don't know if that's the most independent way to do it. So before the state auditor's office can turn its eyes on the other agencies in state government, I think it's important it makes sure it has its house in order, see why the office hasn't met its statutory requirements, and fix the problem internally, and then move on to digging into the books at the rest of the agencies.
Is there a list of different agencies and departments that you probably already have, like a top 10 that we need to take a look at? Whether it's transportation or if it's, children and families, anything like that.
Well, yeah, let me say first that the most important thing that I'm abiding by in this campaign and if I'm elected is that I want the office to be professional and not political. I don't want to assume the office of state auditor and, say, well, I'm a Republican, I'm going to have to go after, if there's a Democrat in the governor's office, go after executive branch agencies. And I want to go in impartially and fairly. That being said, if I had to think about specific areas that stand out to me, I have a daughter at UMass Amherst, and I will say that when I walk the campus with her, and I see the new construction, I wonder, and I might, everything might be perfect, but I wonder about the taxpayer and tuition dollars that go into this construction. I know, for instance, and I would want to know, I should say, is why does it cost so much more to build a parking space? So if you build a parking garage at UMass Boston, each space costs significantly more than it does to build it, about 15 miles away in Salem at Salem State.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why do dorm rooms, say, for UMass Boston cost so much more than they do at other colleges? So I think, you know, in an age where there's so much student debt, and you know, as I mentioned, I'm a father of a college-age daughter, have a college graduate daughter. Tuition weighs heavily on Massachusetts taxpayers' minds, those with children, and those who attended college. I would like to know, are we being as efficient as possible with the tuition and tax dollars that are spent?
When you talk to prospective voters around the Commonwealth, or you've had conversations, do you get confusion as to what the state auditor's office actually does?
Sure do. If you ask people, you know, one of the things I like to ask people is, have you ever read an audit from the state auditor's office?
Right.
Do you have any idea what the results are of these audits? And no one who's honest says that they have. The only person I've spoken to who's read a lot of audits and has acted on them is Governor Baker. Nobody reads them, and I understand. You know, people have lives; they have work to do of their own, and you know, I'm sure you could agree that the work life has spread into home life too, with the advent of email and texting from your boss when you're at home. But I would say that I have a plan for changing this, and my plan is, you know, if you go on the auditor's website, you can read the audits. They're long, they're complex, they're interesting, but I think it would be great if the auditor's office had a database where the average citizen could go onto the site, say they were dealing with the Department of Revenue, and they wanted to see how is that department running, how well is it doing. You could have a quick way to check and see what the findings were, if any, some previous audits at the Department of Revenue or any of the agencies. So just you can have the opportunity to get a quick and dirty on how the agency's doing without having to go through a 15 or 30 page review. And I think those are important and they should be accessible as they are. And I think it could be much neater and easier.
Now, depending on how the Republican and Democratic fields grow or happen to acquire more candidates, if there's going to be more candidates, what do you feel are going to be some of the key issues, without tipping your hand, that are going to be discussed and debated?
Well, my hope in my race is that I can make an issue of experience. I know that the two Democrats running, neither has any experience performing government audits, neither has any significant experience leading teams or groups or managing organizations. I think one thing I've often thought about government is that people run for office for executive positions without any executive experience, without having led organizations. And I have. When I was with the TSA, a brand new government organization, I oversaw screening where I had 1,200 employees. And then I oversaw the compliance and enforcement branch where I had 36 inspectors out there doing government audits. I hope to make my great advantage and experience over the Democratic candidates an issue in the campaign.
Now, if you are successful come November and you're elected auditor, would you see yourself or your office being involved when it came to filing legislature or working with legislators who were filing certain bills?
Absolutely. You know, one piece of legislation I would love to file, so I think it's really something that should be explored, is sort of a quasi-congressional budget office for the state within the auditor's office, and a branch that can look at legislative spending prospectively and have a sense of what legislation will cost and monitoring it as it's going on. So I think that would be a great service to the Commonwealth. I think it'd be a great service to the legislators too. I'm not taking a shot at them. I think it'd be a great tool for them to have an independent view of what initiatives will cost.
I know that, you know, we're right now losing the masks. Seems as though Omicron is slowly, the numbers are dropping. What role do you feel COVID is going to play, whether it's in the summer or as we go into the fall? Any concerns as to how we could have an effect on the campaign?
It's a great question. You know, we don't know. I would say that Zoom is an interesting thing, or I should just say, having virtual conferences is really an interesting thing, because especially if you're running statewide, because of Zoom and such products, you can talk to a town committee in Pittsfield and hang up with that and get on one in Winfield, and without driving for hours and hours to do so. Mm. So there are some advantages that have come about, the way the world has changed and seeing different ways to communicate. But my hope is that we can continue to do things in person and get out and actually look people in the eye and talk to them about their families, ask them how inflation is impacting them. I know the people I've spoken to, that's the top story. Kevin, if you look on social media right now, there's a war going on in Europe, but the top thing that people are talking about is gas prices and the supermarkets and how shelves are empty. And when they're not, the prices are so incredibly high. And that makes this job as auditor that much more important, because there's, people always think the present is the most significant time in history. And people always say that. But, there's no better time than now to stop and say, how are our tax dollars being spent, especially with this crunch on the wallets of families in Massachusetts?
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I definitely couldn't. As we're coming to the end of our brief conversation, I wish it could extend longer, but unfortunately I'm given a certain amount of time and I try to be as efficient as possible. Is there something I haven't asked you in regards to your campaign, but you really feel is important to share with our listening audience?
Well, there's one last thing, and thank you for the opportunity. Yeah. I would say, I am a Republican, and I think going to Beacon Hill as such will give me the opportunity to make sure the successes of the Baker administration aren't undone. You know, when he came into office, the Health Connector had a disastrous start, and now it's a national model. I don't want to see things like this undone as soon as he walks out the door. I want to make sure that homeless families continue to have housing instead of being put into hotels and motels, and that we continue to improve the T. So, yeah, I want to make sure that the successes we've seen under the Republican administration aren't undone come 2023.
Most important now, if folks want to find out more about you, your campaign, whether they want to get involved or just seeking information, what are some of the resources that you have available?
I would ask them to go to my website. It's amore2022.com, A-M-O-R-E, 2022.com. And there you can read about my background, my family, my plans, my vision, and hopefully make a donation.
Anthony, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we can have you back on before the end of the summer, just to kind of refresh things and bring folks, get them ready for the primary or the general election, whatever may be in front of us.
Kevin, thanks to you for having me. I really appreciate it, and I'd love to come back.
You got it. Have a great evening.
You too. Take care.
There he is, Anthony Amore. He is a candidate, a Republican candidate for state auditor. We got to know him just a little bit. And, oh my gosh, look at your watch. That's it for hour number one. Fear not, though. Hour number two is straight ahead. Joining us in just a few moments, we're going to speak with a gubernatorial candidate, Chris Stoddy, joining us in just a few moments. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Each year, about one out of two men and one out of three women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than two or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical Faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
As I said, hour number two, straight ahead, here we are. Later this hour, Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan will join us. But right now, we're going to talk with a gubernatorial candidate, Chris Toti. I want your vote come September for the primaries, and hopefully November for the general election. Chris, welcome to Monday Night Talk. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
Starting out, for those who don't know who you are, tell us just a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to meet you and all your listeners. My wife, Leslie, and I, we arrived in Massachusetts in 1987 to attend Harvard Business School. We lived in downtown Boston for a number of years, ended up settling in Wrentham, and we had six children. We currently have four grandchildren. Our children have left our home at this point. I started a small business outside of Boston soon after business school in the early 90s, eventually grew it to about 900 employees. We have one of our largest facilities is here in Massachusetts with about 300 employees, and we make auto parts and truck parts. Most citizens in Massachusetts own one of our parts somewhere within their lives, a car or an appliance or a lawnmower. So that's a little bit of background on us.
So what went into deciding that you wanted to run to be governor?
Yeah, you know, it's we've been here a long time. The state has been good to us. We've grown a successful business. We raised our family here, and this is where our heart is. And I've become increasingly concerned about our state over the last number of years. I have seen us become more and more expensive every year. For my employees, I hear it every day, just how expensive it is. I don't know if most of your listeners realize just we are in one of the most expensive states in the country on almost every category: housing, groceries, transportation, rent. And it's even worse for our businesses like mine. We are the most expensive state in the country to operate a business. I get calls at least three or four times a year from other states, North Carolina, Florida, Texas, Tennessee, recruiting me. And I'm not sure our citizens realize how vulnerable our state is, given how expensive it is to live here, just for our citizens and also for our businesses. And I just got to a point where I felt like I needed to step out of my private life and the comfort of my private life to give back to our state. I was at the age and the position in life I could do it, and I have the experience and the background being in the private field that felt like the state needed me and I needed to give back.
You know, we appear to be coming out of COVID. We'll cross our fingers, and I don't want to speak too soon, but if you ask certain business owners, a lot of them feel that the state government unfairly caused more harm than good when it came to businesses here in the Commonwealth.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've used the quote by Ronald Reagan that I like, and it says, government's first duty is to protect the people, not run their lives. And I do believe that at the beginning of the pandemic, the intent of the policymakers in our state government was to protect the people. Mm. You know, I was, as a business owner, I remember the first case of COVID when it hit our facility, and it literally took my breath away when I heard it. I was in a meeting. I was so worried for that employee and his family and his parents that lived with him. And so I do believe that at first we were trying to protect each other, but after a while, once the kids were back playing sports and most people were vaccinated and the science was more established, it did begin to feel like government and policymakers were beginning to run people's lives. And there was a lot of frustration towards the end. I'm grateful that as governor, that would be in the rearview mirror for me, because it's been a difficult transition to go from, protecting citizens, you know, to then having them feel like their lives are being controlled.
Well, it seems as though you are taking this run seriously. You've already, according to one of your press releases, you guys have already built a winning team, and you already have a running mate. You want to share with folks who your running mate is?
Yeah, you know, when you launch these campaigns, it's a little bit of a walk of faith that there's going to be people that have a lot of confidence and trust in you. And Kate Campanelli has joined me as my running mate. She's an absolutely delightful person. I think the state will be so pleased with her as lieutenant governor. She comes from Worcester and has roots of four generations from Worcester. Her mom is works in the school district, and Kate also has been a teacher in the classroom. And her father's a retired painting contractor, and she worked in the state legislature for 2 years, and has studied business and economics. And I think she'll just be a wonderful lieutenant governor for our state.
Was it where she's someone who kind of is, you know, in the area of Worcester, it's central Massachusetts, you're kind of, you're not necessarily, I don't know where you would want to put Wrentham, because it's not necessarily South Shore, it's not North Shore, it's kind of, I don't know, it's to the right of the center of central Mass here. Was it a strategic move to bring Kate on board?
You know, it's certainly fortunate, but it was not the intent.
Okay.
I was looking for a running mate that had three attributes that I believe are critical for a public servant. One is they have to be good with people. Mm. A public servant is out among the people. If you look at Lieutenant Governor Polito, she spends her whole life just traveling the state with people. And so someone that has just an orientation towards people. Second is they have to have a tremendous work ethic. You know, these responsibilities for governor and lieutenant governor are full-time, 24/7. And there's you know, just great responsibilities that come with it. And Kate has that. And lastly is someone that's really bright and really intelligent, able to make quick decisions, that knows how the state works and knows the inner workings. And Kate had all those attributes. And so just I was absolutely delighted that she was willing to join with me as the lieutenant governor.
It's been brought up a few times during the show with other guests this evening, and I think it's on everybody's mind as to what's happening over in Ukraine with Russia invading and how it's having a domino effect globally. You actually have actually asked for the state, the governor, to do something in regards to the gas tax. What is that?
Yeah, exactly. As I've been talking from the very beginning, our state has become so expensive for our citizens. I don't know if a lot of your listeners realize this, but in our state, we have experienced the greatest amount of inflation relative to wage adjustments than any other state in the country. Our citizens are hurting more than any other state. Mm. The senior citizens are feeling it. The working families, those that are renters, are really feeling it. And I think it's just a token, perhaps, but as a way to help offer relief, as governor, I would suspend the gas tax for a period just to help the citizens. maybe it's somewhat symbolic for everyone, but I want the citizens to know this about Chris Doty, is that I come from the private sector. I come from a business that makes auto parts. Every dollar counts, and I know that because I've been living it for three decades of my life, and anything we can do to give back a little bit to each of the citizens to help lessen the expenses that they're all experiencing in their lives right now, I think that would be a central part of my service, and also comes from deep within my own soul.
Again, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Chris Doty. He is the candidate for governor, Republican candidate, and we're talking a little bit about his particular campaign at this time. Right now, the legislature is working on the fiscal year 2023 budget, which is somewhere around $48 billion. What do you feel needs to be done to reduce spending in the state and kind of help out the folks who pay taxes?
Yeah, you know, that is a great question, Kevin, and that speaks to my sweet spot. This is the type of issue that people would hire me to fix. So I come from a finance background. I'm very comfortable with budgets, with bond financing, very comfortable with, the relationship between divisions and corporations, and also very comfortable with streamlining and simplifying. You know, my career has been around making things simpler and easier. So much of the cost in our budget could be associated to just over things being too complicated, too much regulation, too much difficulty. I would spend a great deal of time just simplifying things. Second of all would be benchmarking against other states. In my career, I've spent a lifetime of benchmarking my business against other businesses that were similar. New Hampshire, just to the north of us, has some of the best metrics of any state. And we could benchmark against them and start applying some of the things they're doing. I would study every state in our nation and say, okay, for example, who is doing the best on road repair costs per mile? And let's go figure out what they're doing. We could send some of our employees to those states and say, hey, go study that. Or who are doing the best with fraud? Or, you know, which states are doing the best with, you know, any number of metrics, and let's apply those here. And I've been doing that for 30 years. I would do the same thing in the state house.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, and I know that you have been critical of others in regards to when it comes to a key item, local aid, whether it's Chapter 70 funding for education, whether it's Chapter 90 when it comes to local communities being able to do, you know, roadway projects. What's some of the things that a Doty administration would look to do to help in the area of local aid?
Yeah, so of all the candidates, I'm the only one that has dealt with this in real life. This is the relationship between like a corporation and divisions. The towns need to know what their funding is, not just this year, but 3 years from now or 4 years from now.
Right.
Because it's with that they can determine their investments, they can do capital, they can do hiring. Can you imagine if your boss told you, well, I'll figure out what to pay you each at the beginning of each year? You couldn't do any planning. You couldn't buy a home. You couldn't buy a car. I think it shows that the other candidates just don't have that experience to understand that out on the town level, you have to know what your funding is going to look like 3 or 4 years from now so that you can make capital improvements and do your hiring and those types of things. I would put that into a tight formula with them so they can understand, and then I would encourage them on how to use their funding. We could benchmark among the towns, and we could share best practices among all the towns for both education and police and all the other needs that there are. The people need to realize that a state is really just the accumulation of all the towns and cities in our state, and that's where people experience our state, is in their own personal neighborhoods and their communities. And so I would make sure that we have adequate funding and we have a tight, good relationship with each of the towns and the cities in our state.
When we talk transportation, and we've kind of just tap-danced it around just for a bit here, me mentioning Chapter 90 money, but, you know, one of the elephants in the room happens to be the MBTA and some of the issues, whether it's, you know, the transit itself, how it's able to consistently bleed money. And it seems as though it's one of those things that it can't be. There's always issues with being able to provide the proper service, yet it seems like it's one of the biggest expenses in the Commonwealth that the taxpayers and that the state has to take on. Is there anything that you would be able to do or that you would look at if elected?
Well, okay, so this in the business world we call a turnaround. The MBTA is what you would really consider a turnaround. It has a lot of debt. About 26% of their budget is just interest payments. That causes, in that kind of leverage situation, what it causes is underinvestment. Underinvestment in the lines and in the equipment and the facilities. Sometimes it causes underfunding and training. So, you know, again, I've spent my whole career dealing with these types of problems, and I would tell the people of our state, it won't be quick. I can't fix it overnight, but I will fix it. You have to get the right stakeholders in the room. You have to have an aggressive approach, but you also have to think long-term. I think my commitment to the citizens and to everyone would be, you know, it's going to take me some time, but I'll come up with a plan to get the MBTA back on their feet and get them to, you know, be funding and training and at some point beginning to expand and to, you know, be successful. When I was talking about benchmarking, so we're not the only system in the country that we could benchmark against and say, okay, let's take the metrics from other systems and let's see how we're doing and where we need to focus and where we need to improve.
So going from talking about transportation to other areas such as economic development and stimulating our economy, even when we're seeing so many different crises, not only dealing with COVID, but now we're dealing with something on a global spectrum with a war that, you know, between Russia and Ukraine. What can be done to keep our economy going and help us not go into any backslides?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, this is kind of a funny story. So on Monday of this week, I went down to my office and got some messages on my phone, and I had a message from North Carolina, and it was the director of economic development asking if I wanted to move my business down to North Carolina.
Right.
And what he said was energy costs. He said, you know, with your energy costs, would you like to relocate? On the campaign trail, I've been talking a lot about this. Right now, our citizens might not realize that they pay the third highest electric costs in the nation. It's predicted that we will pass to number two or number one within the next 12 months or next 24 months if we do nothing else. So there's those types of structural problems that need to be fixed quickly and aggressively so that we don't lose any more of our businesses. Right now, we're doing okay because the economy is strong, but imagine the next recession.
Right.
And I've lived through three of them. Imagine the next recession when you have Virginia, Tennessee, North Carolina calling our businesses saying, hey, we'll relocate you, we'll help pay the cost and get you out of high-cost Massachusetts. It's terrifying for a business owner like me. And knowing all the people that are have jobs in companies. You know, this would be a day one activity for me, is I would say out loud, no, we cannot afford to lose more jobs to Tennessee and all these other states. We've got to be aggressive. I will be the most aggressive governor in the country on reducing our costs for our people and for our businesses, because we have to. We absolutely have to.
And again, if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Chris Doty. He is a candidate for governor, a Republican, and we're talking about his campaign. What has it been like meeting voters and talking with them, and what are you hearing from them?
Yeah, you know, it's just the things we're talking about, the price of gas, the price of groceries. You know, here's a fun, interesting statistic. So we have the third most expensive groceries in America. And in New Hampshire, they have one of the lowest cost of groceries in the country, just across the border. And you know, it's just, it's kind of dinner room table or dining room table conversation, kitchen table conversations about the price of things. The senior citizens are getting hit so hard because they're on fixed income. And all of a sudden, can you imagine, they go from filling up their oil tank from $400 to $800, and they're on fixed income. It's heartbreaking for a for someone like me that understands that we can fix these problems. We don't have to. We do not have to suffer the way we're suffering in our state. And it bit breaks my heart. And I think I can fix these things. And then I talk to the working families, both at my own company and those that I meet on the campaign trail, particularly the renters. I don't know if most people realize, but renters, the rent has gone up here 27%.
Yep.
That's about 30% higher than anywhere else. And it doesn't have to be that way. So anyway, I feel encouraged and energized, but also I feel a sense of urgency. As the campaign has gone on, the sense of urgency in my heart has been increasing more and more every day. I feel more and more anxious for those people that are just struggling and suffering with the cost of living here.
You actually touched it. I don't know if you was able to sense, but I was actually going to talk housing. Housing stock has been an issue for the past few years. The governor mentioned it in one of his state addresses a couple of years ago, saying that we have a major problem. We don't have enough housing for the folks who live here. And as you had mentioned, that rents are going through the roof. What can your administration do? What would you seek to do to hopefully alleviate the situation or create more housing here in the Commonwealth? Is that possible?
Oh, absolutely. So this is a supply chain problem. Everybody's been hearing about supply chain. So for my entire career, I've been part of a supply chain for making parts for cars and lawnmowers. I was talking to a developer the other day, and they said that to make more affordable housing right now in our state can take about 4 to 5 years, about 3 years of paperwork and getting approvals, and then about, let's say, 18 months to 2 years for construction. Now, all that time that it takes, that, let's say, 3 years, two to 4 years, he said sometimes even 5 years to make affordable housing doing paperwork, As governor, I would say, okay, my goal is that lead time, we're going to cut it in half. We're going to come up with all the regulations that slow the supply chain down. We're going to cut them in half. So if it takes 18 months to construct, we're going to get it so we're down to 18 months to do all the paperwork and get through all the regulations and all the zoning requirements. If we can do that, we can increase our supply. And therein is the answer. Now, this is really simple. In the business world, this is a very common, very simple problem to be addressed. And when I hear how the State House talks about it, it just befuddled me. You know, that we just have to increase our supply, and we just have to make it easier for everyone.
So I would ask you this, and you know, you sound as though you're well studied on a lot of the different issues. If elected, you would be a Republican governor in a state that has, you know, the Senate and the House are predominantly Democrat. What's your style in order to be able to get things done with an overwhelming majority of Democrats?
Well, you know, for 22 of 30 years, our state has elected someone just like me. Mm-hmm. And have you wonder, well, why is that? We're such a progressive state. Why do we keep electing governors from my background, business, fiscal conservative, someone that's sensitive to the most vulnerable in our state? I think it's because our citizens are well-educated. They recognize there needs to be balance, there needs to be debate and discussion, and there needs to be someone from the business world that is accustomed to fast execution, not just talk and discussion, but actual movement and getting things done at a pace that the citizens are comfortable with. And so, you know, I think our state's very accustomed to having someone like me. that has a pace that's fast and fairly aggressive to fix these problems. And so I think that's part of the miracle of our state.
Okay. And again, we're speaking with Chris Doty. He is a candidate for governor here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And you know, the one thing I haven't necessarily touched upon, because of COVID, a residual of COVID from the federal government, was not only the CARES Act funding, but the American Rescue Plan Act funding, which whoever is elected will, you know, somehow be in the mix when it comes to spending or deciding how that's spent. How do you envision the ARPA monies being spent, or at least being overseeing how those are put to use?
Well, you know, I'm not in the seat right now, so I don't see all the demands, but I certainly would communicate with our towns and cities, our mayors and our administrators, saying, okay, you know, where is this money best spent for all of you? I think in my own business life, if I had an extra, you know, large amount of money come in, I would bring in the stakeholders and say, let me hear it. You know, what are my blind spots? Where are our needs? And so, and I'd like to hear it from, you know, the towns and the cities. What roads or you know, just where are the challenges? So, you know, in the business world, you know, sometimes I've had the best idea, but a lot of times I haven't. A lot of times it's been other people have had better ideas than me. So I think as governor, I'd be one that listens well, and I'd pay attention, and I'd ask lots of questions.
We're at the point of the conversation. We've got a couple of minutes left with you, and I give you an opportunity. Maybe there's something that wasn't brought up or a question that I didn't ask you, but that is kind of top of mind and something that you want to make sure you get out to as many ears and eyes as possible as you are out there campaigning. If there's something that you can discuss for a moment, what would that be?
Well, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate that question very much because, you know, I've been in the private sector, and sometimes I have not been as attuned to the future as I am right now. Everyone needs to realize that in about 8 months, we will make a big decision, which is, do we want one party control in the state house? The Republican conservative voice will be completely removed from the state house. And do you want that? Because it's coming, right? It's just, if we all do nothing, if we just sit on the sidelines and just say, well, you know, we'll be indifferent or apathetic, our state will go to 100% control of one party. Now, there are 9 states in America that have done this. Washington, Oregon, California, New York. Do you want Massachusetts to be like those states? Homeless camps in Oregon, huge migration out of California, deep deficits in those states. We're on the cusp of that. This is not a time for citizens to do nothing. It's time that we stand up and say, do we want that? Do we want single party control? And if we don't, we have to unite. We have to stand up and say, no, we don't want to go the way of those states. We want to have 2 parties in the state house. We want rigorous debate. We want an aggressive business person still in the corner office. And I hope that our people will hear that and look at it and go, no, we don't want to follow the path of those other states. We want to be different. We want to have, you know, a 2-party system still in our state. And I worry that, you know, as a candidate, that my message, I want to be a good candidate, but I also want to get my message out that it's coming and we've got to all stand up and be accounted.
Well, I will say is that there's so many more issues. We easily could have talked for another half an hour. As we didn't get a chance to talk about the opioid epidemic crisis, water, veterans, all kinds of other things that I'm sure that there are other hosts out there who'll talk with you about. But we would love to have you back on maybe sometime during the summer or towards the primary, just to kind of do a refresher and find out where things are at on the campaign trail. So we hope to hear from you again.
Well, thanks so much. And if anyone would like to join our movement,
yep.
My website is Chris4MA, so ChrisForMA.com. And we're looking for an army of volunteers to join us.
Well, Chris, we thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to keeping an eye on your campaign trail.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
You got it. There he is, Chris Doughty, candidate for governor. I'm going to step aside when we come back. Mayor of the City of Champions, Robert Sullivan, joins us here on Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh.
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
The FCC grants licenses to broadcasters with the essential obligation that their stations serve their local community. 95.9 WATD serves our community like few other stations can, with our award-winning news department and with our commitment to public service announcements, connecting our listeners to events throughout the area. If you belong to a not-for-profit organization, we can help. See if you meet the criteria for free public service announcements. Email our public services director, John Shea, at 959WATD.com, or call our office to see how we can get your message on the air.
This is Dave Tinley, a member of Phoenix Masonic Lodge, located at the corner of Broadway and Washington Street in Hanover, inviting you to our monthly public breakfast this Sunday. Breakfast will be served from 8 to 11 a.m., and the proceeds help support local food pantries, whose work in our communities is so vitally important. Don't forget to ask for one of our frequent guest cards. Purchase 9 breakfasts and get the 10th one free. Bring the entire family for a great breakfast at Phoenix Lodge in Hanover this Sunday and help out a great cause at the same time.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we cruise into the final segment of the radio show. And we thank you very much for tuning into this program faithfully for, my goodness, well over 10 years, whether it's with the previous host, Bob Hedlund, or myself, which one of these days, myself and Larry will have to get together and figure out when exactly I kind of took over the official helm and took this thing the additional length of time. But we thank you for tuning in. If you miss any segments, we do turn these around rather quick. You can go to the homepage of WATD and search for podcast, and you should be able to see the latest Monday Night Talk segment or show. Joining us right now, he is the mayor, the 50th mayor of the City of Champions. Mr. Robert Sullivan joins us. I know you hear him weekly when the news department has him on to do check-ins on what's going on. Mayor, welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
Kevin, good evening. I thought my title on your show was the unofficial official co-host.
No, because you and I had an argument. I had to change that to official.
That's true. No, that's true. You're right. I'm still waiting for my hat, you promised me. But no, how are you doing? And again, thanks for having me on the show. How are you doing this week?
It was actually a mug, but okay. Anyway. I know we're joking, but I actually want to kind of start out on a kind of a somber note. The city lost one of its champions this week, and that is in the name of Gene Marrow. Could you take a moment to kind of put into perspective this loss for the city?
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Marrow, I went to his wake tonight at Russell Peaker on Belmont Street. He was just a gentleman, a true Brocktonian. His family is just generational here in Brockton, and I had the honor and privilege to be on the football team. He was a coach of mine. He was the first African-American principal at Brockton High School. He volunteered so much time. He was an educator. He was a mentor. He was a leader. He was also a member of the Brockton Redevelopment Authority, a member of the License Commission, all volunteered, non-paid committees and boards, and just a great guy. And he and his late brother, Bo Marrow, I'm sure they're up in heaven right now reacquainting themselves, but just a really sad time. When we talk about the City of Champions, Gene Marrow was definitely a champion from our city. So, he left a mark, and You know, his sister-in-law is actually my chief of staff, Sidney Marrow, and you know, I'm saddened that we lost him, but everything that he did in Brockton was done in a manner that it's going to continue to lead us into the next generation. I mean, he was a mentor for so many youth in Brockton, and never forgot, you know, the students of Brockton High and the players that played on the football team, and just a great guy, just a great guy.
Indeed, I wanted to make sure that we paid tribute to Gene before we kind of got into the meat and potatoes of our conversation, knowing that he was such a great champion of the community.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. Thank you, Kevin.
So, you know, the purpose of having you on is to kind of talk about maybe some of the things that you don't mention every week, but that it's actually happening as the city, even though we are dealing with COVID and we seem to be looking out the rearview mirror, and it looks as though COVID's, you know, getting further and further away at the moment. I don't want to jinx anything. But, you know, things are flourishing in the city of Brockton.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And you know, we've continued to be diligent and vigilant when it comes to the pandemic. But you're right. I mean, it's we're in a green classification right now, and we only have 53 active current cases. And, you know, in January, you know, we had thousands. So it's definitely trending in the right direction. And, you know, one thing I can say is the mayor and his lifelong Brocktonian, Brockton's a special place, and everybody that lives here and works here understands that. So we're going to continue to keep the foot on the pedal as we, you know, welcome developers here in the city of Brockton. And, you know, in May of 2021, Kevin, I launched the Brockton Open for Business Initiative, and it's really, really paid off. And, you know, we also provide a free business app in conjunction with the Old Colony Planning Council led by Mary Waldron, and it's called Brockton MA City of Champions app. And it's a free app, and it's allowing the business community and residents and visitors to check out what's going on in Brockton, and, you know, shopping and restaurants and personal care services. And, you know, we need to continue to really think outside the box for development, number one. And if you have journeyed to the city lately, you probably have never seen so many cranes in the downtown area. So, you know, I'm really excited about the construction that's going on. You know, we're going to continue to just champion what's good about Brockton. Brockton Beer Company, which is the first ever black-owned brewery in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, will be opening up on April 1st, downtown Brockton. And, you know, I'm really, really excited about that. It's actually on Frederick Douglass Avenue and Main Street, Kevin, and it's the old Kresge building. It's a brand-new building by NeighborWorks Housing Solutions and Market Rate upstairs, and this great, great new brewery downstairs. And literally kitty-corner from the building is the actual spot of the Liberty Tree. And that's where Frederick Douglass would come and preach about the evils of slavery and William Lloyd Garrison. And it was a stop on the Underground Railroad right there. So what I did last month, Kevin, of course, February is Black History Month. And, you know, it really shouldn't just be a month. It's 365 days. And, yep. You know, March is Women's History Month. But I was able to actually retrieve actual pieces of the Liberty Tree that had been stored unbeknownst to anybody in the city in the basement of an old hotel. And the hotel is going to be renovated. And I was really concerned that it was going to be thrown out, Kevin. So we were able to cut up pieces, and I did a Liberty Tree tour, and I went to all the different schools, the parochial schools and the charter school, and of course Brockton High School, and gave pieces to put on display to talk about what the Liberty Tree means, not just to Brockton, but to the Commonwealth and to the nation. And when Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito were here recently, I was able to give them a piece as well. So again, there's a lot of history in Brockton, and we always have to remember the history to forge ahead for the future. So there's a lot going on, and I'm really proud of what we're doing here in the city of Brockton.
You recently have given a couple of different speeches. First and foremost, your inaugural address. What were some of the top items that you addressed and pointed out to the folks in attendance or able to take in the speech?
Yeah, I mean, some of the things that I've been able to share, and again, it was different this year. You know, the inauguration was limited to one guest, and I was able to bring my wife Maria, and really couldn't do a formal inauguration other than the swearing in out of abundance of caution. But, you know, one thing that I was able to really stress is that working in collaboration, we're achieving great things. And, you know, I'm thankful to the city council and the school committee and state delegation. And, you know, one thing that is going to be a game changer is the $98 million bonding authorization. What we're going to do is we're going to have a state-of-the-art public safety facility complex, which is going to be a city block, Kevin. It's going to be from High Street all the way down Warren Ave to West Elm Street. And it's going to house four of our departments. It's going to be our fire department. The fire station that they use right now actually was utilized for horse-drawn fire apparatus, and it was actually wired by Thomas Edison. So we're going to be able to have a new fire station, a new Brockton Emergency Management Agency, BEMA, police station, and then IT, which is IT right now is at Brockton High School, our informational technology. So we're going to be able to be in one location. It's going to free up space at Brockton High, classroom space for our students and teachers. So, you know, I was able to talk about that, and, you know, $98 million is really a ton of money, but right now, bonding authorizations is really beneficial to municipalities with the interest rates. So between that and working with our partners to help our small businesses, you know, we have a business assistance program. It's free money, $10,000 to businesses. And, you know, working with other other entities in Brockton, there's a group, and it's led by a young woman in Brockton called Black Owned Brockton. And we were able to do a maker's market, Kevin, and it was actually outside of Brockton High at the City Hall and the amphitheater to showcase different, you know, people that are selling goods, and then also at the Westgate Mall. So, you know, it's all hands on deck. I can talk about the great things in Brockton, you know, the Fuller Craft Museum and Milton Museum relocated to Brockton. So, you know, we have Picasso's and Renoir's and Remington's here in Brockton and Whistler's. I also was able to work with our partners in Plymouth County. I want to thank the Plymouth County Commissioners and Tom O'Brien, the Treasurer, because through the CARES Act money, and I went to Plymouth just last Thursday night to get an additional $1.3 million in reimbursement. So, you know, we've exceeded $19 million reimbursed from the county, and we've been able to use that money, Kevin. I mean, we used millions of dollars to be able to buy laptops for every student in Brockton Public Schools. Never thought it could happen, being a one-to-one school district, but we were able to do that. And then also $1 million to retrofit the Shaw Center, which you know where that is. I mean, it's adjacent to the Campanelli Stadium where the Brockton Rocks play. And $1 million to convert the Shaw Center to a premier vaccination and testing site. So, you know, from my perspective, Kevin, I'm hoping COVID really minimizes, you know, but I need to be able to, as a mayor and as an effective leader, you have to be a good listener. So right now we're listening to what people want, the ARPA money, the Federal American Rescue Plan Act funds. Brockton has $17 million already. I want to thank Congressman Stephen Lynch, who actually delivered it to us, and another $17 million in the queue. And we created an online ARPA survey. So I wanted to know exactly what are some residents and business community members looking for, something perhaps we hadn't even thought of. But, you know, we are going to be utilizing the ARPA money, biggest bang for the buck right now. And we had actually 45 different nonprofits apply for funds. I've set aside $2 million to help these different entities in Brockton. So, you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, the next 2 years. Of course, we're two-year terms here, and I was just reelected and sworn in January. So, you know, we need to continue to get as much grant awards as possible. Lieutenant Governor Polito was just here recently with the Undersecretary Ashley Stover and gave a $766,000 grant awards program. And so it's great to get this money, but we want to maximize that. And one thing I've done, Kevin, and you've known me a long time, is, you know, I just want to continue to be the cheerleader for Brockton. And again, a lot of people have heard of Brockton, and unfortunately, a lot of times they see bad things on the news. We're the only city in Plymouth County, but I'll tell you, there's just some wonderful things. We need to talk about the kids that graduated from Brockton High last year, the six of them that went to Ivy League schools, you know. And so I'm excited to continue to work with you and keep giving updates, and really just excited to be here tonight.
And again, if you're just tuning in, Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan is our guest. I want to kind of stay with the downtown corridor because, as you said, there has been a renaissance in the down. You mentioned 121 Main Street, which is a fantastic building. You talk about Brockton Bear Company. I was in the city over the weekend driving around and marveled at the new Ganley building for the Department of Employment. And not only that, you got a satellite campus for the community college, Massasoit, that's there. Took a spin down West Elm, the old professional building that sat vacant and burnt out. Now is a plush new, I would say, what would you call that? Is that a higher, it's a fantastic building where you've got a parking garage at the bottom.
Aesthetically, it's beautiful. It looks like something on Newbury Street in Boston.
It's upscale.
It's fully rented. And the old Hotel Bryant, which is now called the Elm Court, right next to that, actually was just acquired by a developer named Steve Young out of Hingham. And he's planning on spending $4 million on renovations to make that high-end as well. And, you know, I think the biggest driving force is the fact that we can get into Boston. We have three commuter stops in Brockton. We can get into South Station in 35 minutes. And so, you know, to be able to talk to you about the 459 housing units completed in downtown and the other 359 right now in planning and permitting stages and another 200 in negotiations, you know, we have a lot of tools in the toolbox. And so, you know, we use the historic tax credits and we use the TIFs and the TIFs, but, you know, the HDIP program, you know, the Housing Development Incentive Program is something that's extremely beneficial to Brockton. 139 of those units I mentioned were based on the HDIP. So, you know, we have a second phase of Trinity Financial based out of Boston, doing a second phase right now of 113 units on Montello Street, which again is literally looking at the train station, and it's next to a Enzo Gallery, which is an artist location downtown. And, you know, it's something that I'm really proud of because, you know, a lot of mayors during COVID put a pause on construction, and I just couldn't do that. I knew we could do it in a safe manner. We'd keep construction going, and, you know, we need to continue to do that. We also, you know, need to be thinking outside the box and cost containment measures and fiscal responsibility. And one thing we're doing right now, actually, is in Brockton, it's connectbrockton.com. It's a website. It's a survey. It's a broadband survey. We want to see if the city of Brockton should get into the fiber optic network endeavor, you know, for high-speed internet and affordable prices. And, you know, it may or may not come to fruition, but the biggest thing is to start doing due diligence and create the potential building blocks for success. So, you know, I'm excited, Kevin. And, you know, you mentioned that the state building, the old Ganley building, and, you know, the fact that Massasoit is going to have a presence down there. It's a new, beautiful building, and it really is a renaissance right now. And, you know, I know a lot of people have said, well, it's great to have all these wonderful housing units, but what are the amenities coming with it? And, you know, one thing that I've done recently with my CFO, Troy Clarkson, is we've welcomed developers, and I'm talking not just Massachusetts developers. I met with a gentleman the other day from Nashville. Another gentleman flew up from Orlando. I mean, these are high net worth people that really understand that the return on investment in Brockton right now is real. And it's a place where, you know, you can live, you can work, you can play, and you can raise your family. I mean, I'm a mayor, and that's my title and my job, and it's an honor, but my biggest responsibility is being a husband and a dad to three kids. So, you know, we're in playoffs on Saturday. We haven't won a game in basketball this year for fourth graders, so I'm not the greatest coach. I hope I'm a better mayor.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I was going to say, is, you know, my earlier conversation, my conversation prior to you joining us, a gubernatorial candidate, one of the topics was housing, knowing that the housing stock is hurting. How proud is your administration that a lot of that's what's being developed right now is transit-oriented housing for folks who, you know what, maybe they work in Boston or maybe they work in Quincy, but they could just jump on the MBTA and they could take the rail home and, you know, within 5 minutes walk to their home, their apartments, their condos.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, and that's real. And I mean, I know that for a fact because we have young professionals that are working at City Hall now that were, you know, they were priced out of Dorchester and Southie and Charlestown and even, you know, even Quincy and Braintree. And, you know, I know both mayors and both those municipalities, they're great places. You know, Quincy's a city of presidents, but we're the city of champions, right? So, you know, but it's real because they can save money and then chip away at their student loans and different endeavors like that. So the fact that, you know, Secretary Mike Keneally and Undersecretary Stolber and Dan Rivera, the former mayor who's now CEO of Mass Development, you know, they've come to Brockton to do walking tours with us. And, you know, we need to continue to really showcase Brockton. And that's, you know, that's my role as mayor and, you know, also to work with the business community and Metro South Chamber of Commerce and the Brockton Redevelopment Authority. And we also have some associations, as you remember, Kevin, from your Brockton days, the Downtown Business Association and then the Campello and Montello Business Association. So, you know, a lot of people don't know Cape Cod Cafe, which you can buy the frozen pizzas pretty much everywhere now in New England. You know, based here in Brockton, W.B. Mason, based here in Brockton, Concord Foods, based in Brockton. Three, you know, right now we have three hospitals right here. And we have the oldest candy company. It beats Hershey. It's the oldest family-owned candy company in the nation. The old Washburn candy,
yep,
down on Perkins Ave, you know, the old ribbon candy they used to make for the holiday season. So, you know, I'm really excited that, you know, we are going to continue to showcase Brockton. I'm sponsoring and I'm hosting all the mayors. They're coming the 30th. All the mayors in the Commonwealth have been invited to Brockton under the MMA program, Mass Municipal Association, and I'm hosting it. And so, I just want to tell Brockton's story, and, you know, to be an effective leader, you got to listen to what other municipalities are doing, and, you know, some of the ideas may or may not work here in the city. But I've said it before, a lot of your listeners are throughout Plymouth County, and I want to thank them for always tuning into your show. It's a special show, but what's good for Brockton is good for Halifax and Plimpton and Scituate and, you know, just throughout the county. So we got to continue to work together and collaborate.
It's funny you mentioned Washburn, because I lived up in that area, and it was nothing better on like a spring or summer day to smell the candy factory. It would drive you out of your mind because it's like it smelled so good. I wanted to ask you kind of a secret ingredient to the success of what's going on, other than the leadership in the city, but a guy like Rob May. How important is having a city planner?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really invaluable. I mean, to have someone that has a proven experience that is based in City Hall, yep, that, again, has the ability to think outside the box. And, you know, I was asking him today to call some developers that I read about in Banker and Tradesman and Boston Business Journal and, you know, reach out to these folks. Let's, you know, maybe they don't know about Brockton. Maybe they do. And he'll do it. And Robert Jenkins is the executive director of the BRA, the Brockton Redevelopment,
sure,
Authority. And same thing. You know, every time I meet with the developers, I always have the two Roberts at the table with me, along with the CFO. And, you know, we need to continue really to build Brockton together. I mean, we are better together. And, you know, if the city and the business community continue to communicate and collaborate, you know, with each other, you know, great things are happening and they'll continue to happen.
What are the final pieces that will complete the renewal of the city center? Is it two-way traffic? Are there other developments or maybe big-name restaurants that might be, you know, looking to settle in one of the developments?
Yeah, I mean, two-way traffic has been talked. I was a city councilor, you know, for 14 years, mm-hmm, as a councilor-at-large, and it had been talked and talked and talked. Well, talk is cheap, so action is real. So we are actually doing, the traffic commission in Brockton just approved it. So Warren Ave right now is one way from Pleasant Street to Belmont Street near the Boys and Girls Club, yep, which is an awesome, awesome group in Brockton. But with the $98 million public safety building, that's going to be short-sighted. We need to change it. So we are working with our consultants. It's been approved. It's going to be two-way traffic. And, you know, it's really going to beautify, you know, that area. With the ARPA money, you know, we are also putting a lot of money into the rehab of parks in Brockton. And if you haven't seen DW Fields Park in a while, you're missing out. It's a hidden gem in the,
sure,
city. The golf course, you know, is one of the best in the Commonwealth for a municipal course. And, you know, with Marvelous Marvin Hagler Way, which is a new street that was designated to the city by the city council, and State Rep Jerry Cassidy, who's my rep here in Brockton, he was able to get $150,000 from the Commonwealth. So we're going to be putting up a statue to honor Marvelous Marvin Hagler. The old gym where the Petronelli brothers trained Marvin and other champions is being renovated by Codman Square Development. Ted Carman is the developer. So, you know, there's really good things happening, but, you know, that's in the downtown. And you know, Brockton's large geographic, so we want to go all around the city, east, north, west, and south. And the village section, you know, up in on the north side would be ripe. And I know George Montilio from Montilio's Bakery, who's up there right now, and he and I have met. He wants to do a natural expansion as well. So, you know, I'm excited. There's a hotel in the queue right now for the Westgate Mall area. And, you know, we are really welcoming businesses and also taking care of the businesses that are here, Kevin. And, you know, one of the things that people have told me is they still come to Brockton if they have, you know, family, is because of the high education and quality of Brockton High School. And, you know, it's the largest public high school east of the Mississippi. And, you know, I'm biased because I'm a graduate of class of 1988. But, you know, it's 4,000 kids. And, you know, I went on from Brockton High to Boston College, and a lot of my academic rigor was harder in high school than some of my courses at BC. So, you know, we need to continue to showcase that and the talent that's here. And the number one asset, we're not wealthy in terms of financial ledgers and you know, statements of our financial ability. But the number one value are the people here, the hardworking, dedicated, skilled people that are in Brockton. And you know what speaks volumes, Kevin? I just went out to the market, Wall Street, to, in essence, refinance our OPEB debt liability, $300 million. And myself and Troy Clarkson were at 125 High Street for 12 hours getting grilled by all the financial bigwigs. And the last one that came in was Eaton Vance. And the woman asked me a bunch of questions, and at the end I said, do you have any further questions, ma'am? And she said, I do. How long did it take you to get to Boston today? And I said, well, the expressway was tight, so it took me almost 2 hours from Brockton. I said, how about you? And she said, an hour and 45. I said, well, where do you live? Now, she's number two at Eaton Vance. She could live anywhere, right?
Yep.
I said, where do you live? She goes, I live on the east side of Brockton.
Wow.
And I said, you're kidding me. What can I ask you why? And she said, yes, the diversity of the people and the education. Now, that speaks volumes right there. And that's a true story, and I'm really, I was really pleased to meet her. Her name's Ms. Santiago at Eaton Vance, and just really, really proud. And, you know, we went to the market, and it was a two-day sale, and we had to close at day one because we had $1.3 billion with a B of invested, and we had to stop it at $300 million. So,
wow.
You know, these are the things that, you know, you don't read about in the Herald or the Globe or even the local newspaper, the Enterprise, but these are things that are happening behind the scenes, which is good for the city.
I want to just digress just for a half a second. You mentioned Marvin Hagelin. I know that we do have a special event last summer to remember Marvin. What's it going to take in order to get the statue? Is this something that's already, the wheels are turning and it's going to be done? Or is there going to be benefits to raise the money?
No. Rep Cassidy was really great to get that money. And, you know, if you're coming into the North End, they have one for Tony DeMarco there, yep. A nice statue. Now, you know, this isn't going to be a statue like the one that was gifted to the city of Rocky Marciano.
Right.
It's the largest sports statue in the Northern Hemisphere. It's huge, right? It's huge. This is going to be an appropriate statue in the greatest location, which is, you know, right outside of the gym that's going to be rehabbed across from the late Mayor Bill Carpenter garage. That whole area right now with Trinity Financial phase two being developed down there. That whole thing is going to be great. So we'll put a pocket park down there. It's going to be greenery. It's going to be a fitting tribute. We've already created a committee right now, Kevin, that we're working on. So it's not if it's going to happen. It's when it's going to happen, and it is going to happen. And it's a fitting tribute to the champ. And you know, we're gonna really make sure that it's an appropriate you know, remembrance of Marvelous Marvin Hagler. He passed away, of course, last year, and he'll never be forgotten here in the City of Champions.
Again, we've been speaking with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, also official co-host of Monday Night Talk. We got about 2 minutes left. Anything we haven't touched upon, but you want to at least take a moment to talk about on air.
No, again, I mean, we are, you know, just, you know, we're not going to be forgetful of COVID. And in Brockton, the death count, I get it every day, and we're up to 549 deaths. And, you know, we are turning the corner, as you said, Kevin. And, you know, we spent $250,000. I authorized that to buy testing kits, and Plymouth County gave us really just a plethora of them as well. So right now we're working with all our community partners and a lot of the pastors to get them out, Brockton Public Schools and the like. So I'm just going to ask everybody, please, please be safe. And, you know, if you haven't gotten your booster shot, please, please consider doing so. And we have that regional site. DPH designated the Shaw Center in Brockton. We had ramped it up as a city site, and we did so well on it that DPH, to their credit, came back and said, let's make it a regional site. And that's where the governor, lieutenant governor, myself got our booster shot. So again, it is open 3 days a week now. It is a booster regional site, so you can live anywhere and come to the City of Champs. And if you do, feel free to, you know, frequent our restaurants and get our gas and, you know, do what you want here in the City of Champions. We always welcome you.
Mayor, thank you again for joining us, and we'll check back in a few weeks to see where things stand in the great city, the city
of
Champions.
Yeah, no, Kevin, thank you for having me on. And next time, I'm going to come down and be in person in your studio.
Yeah, and you'll have to stay for the whole show if you're going to be the host, co-host.
I can do that.
Okay.
I can do that, Kevin.
Excellent.
Just give me my coffee mug, and I'll be there, pal. Thank you.
That's all the time we have until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great evening.